Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, of course, Cicely Davis. I hope your Father's Day was enjoyable and memorable, and that all you dads out there were honored, celebrated, and really relished in your manliness. If you're not a father, I hope you took the time to remember to honor and appreciate the one who gave you life. Before we plunge in today's episode, please subscribe and leave a comment. It's important to me that these episodes evoke conversation. It really, truly inspires me to continue in these important issues. You know, there's so much going on in our country in the way of politics, broadcasts, and social media, etc. We have Joe Biden's Department of Justice enacting efforts to stop the Minneapolis Police Department from fighting crime. This, of course, is personal to me, being a resident of Minneapolis. Minneapolis, of course, reigning as ground zero, the mascot and heart of the Defund the Police movement. Murder rates have more than doubled in Minneapolis from 2019 to current. Hence the many, many reasons I ran against the fascist, American-hating, Black-hating, Jew-hating, middle-class-hating, remarkably ineffective, undeserving Ilhan Omar, who fought tirelessly to make defunding the police a reality. We had rescue teams, while still attempting to remain hopeful, went from declaring the missing submersible as lost to reporting passengers above the Titan sub likely died in milliseconds, mostly due to immense underwater pressure. And the recent CNN podcast interview of former President Barack Obama, who continues his play of racial division. A few days prior to that interview, he had an interview with Charlemagne the God of the Breakfast Club, in which Charlemagne asked the former president what he did specifically for Black people and the Black community, to which Obama could not answer. He offered up his indirect word salad, which amounted to absolutely nothing but an embarrassing attempt to evade the question. I guess the narrative never gets old, that race card never wears out, and for the many easily misled and ignorant, as referring to so many in the Black community and white liberals alike, Obama never disappoints. I told you all in my first episode that I was raised in a Democratic household where politics was not discussed. However, my sister and I were told by my mother that we were Democrats and this is how we should vote. End of discussion. This was supported by an unfortunate generalization that one party was for the rich and one for the poor, Republican and Democrats, respectively. Since we were clearly not rich, we had no choice but to blindly vote the way the majority of the Black race voted, as most heavily influenced and led by LBJ. And I followed suit. Didn't question, didn't deviate, did as I was told, believe as I was influenced and led. And then Barack Obama. If you can remember when Bill Clinton hit the scene, everyone just went gaga. This was not because Americans were tired of Republican rule. Bill Clinton just presented differently. He was admittedly and uniquely relatable. He used cliches and referred to everyday euphemisms that previous presidents suppressed, presenting as polished and unblemished. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, embraced words and phrases like willy-nilly and don't dilly-dally. Now, this may seem small and trite, but for so many Americans, this was a welcome and refreshing quality that brought a high-positioned politician down to a relatable level that seemed cozy and familiar. Now, voters began to imagine themselves being able to have a beer or attending a cookout with their president or seeing him as one of us. Obama gave me that very same sense of familiarity from a cultural perspective, of course, but something more than that. In February 2007, Steve Croft and 60 Minutes traveled to Illinois to meet a young, educated, articulate, and talented senator who had become a political phenomenon. Barack Obama believed with unnerved confidence he would or could become our nation's 44th president. But the title of the interview was The Long Shot Candidate. The senator spoke about his skill to bear was being able to pull together the different strands of American life and focus on what we all had in common. He represented Black America in a way that manifested of the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he spoke about the reality of seeing a Black president within 40 years. I remember during that interview, him walking over to where Abraham Lincoln sat and served in the legislature and delivered the House Divided speech. He was poised. At age 45, he was one of only three Black senators since Reconstruction. The first Black president of Harvard Law Review, a professor of constitutional law at the University of Chicago, and an accomplished author of two books ranking as bestsellers. He admired Abraham Lincoln as someone who had even less experience than he had in political leadership, but grew into it with permanent societal impact as present today and long into the future. I have to admit, his appeal to me as a young Black woman at that time was that he was Black, but also was his wife and kids. You see, this is relative to that familiarity. His family looked like my relatives, and he was the ideal. The family was the ideal of what my community could have, attain, and accomplish in this better America. The media and Blacks were hungry for a new face with a compelling story. He represented what America could be and far we had come as a society, and no one could argue with the implications of the positive outcomes of such a hope and what it could mean for all Americans, which is why so many Republican conservatives and independents cast their vote in his favor. As he interviewed with Steve Croft, he echoed eerily like Trump, referring to the urgent need to recover the sense of respect from around the world that America had lost over the previous years. I am rooted in the African-American community, but I'm not defined by it. His words. I am comfortable in my racial identity, but that's not all I am. Again, his words. And then the question and answer that changed it all for me. The answer that solidified my vote for Barack Obama. Croft asked, "Do you think this country is ready for a Black president?" "Yes," Barack answered. "You don't think it's going to hold you back?" "No. I think if I don't win this race, it will be because of other factors. It's going to be because I have not shown the American people a vision for where the country needs to go that they can embrace." Let me explain why that answer was so very important, especially and particularly for me at that time. You see, he wasn't speaking from a "we shall overcome" perspective. He was not relying or tugging at white guilt. This was simply about ability and merit and efficacy to share a vision for the American people. And if he and he alone fell short of sharing that vision, he was accepting their decision to not cast their vote of confidence in him as the next 44th president. That's it. Simple. Candidate A versus candidate B. He was not dwelling on and on about race, color, or creed, just ability, experience, and a believable relative vision for the next 4 years. Once he got in, well, that's something altogether different, which of course led me to not vote for him for the second term. With statements like, "Racism is in the DNA of America and transmitted through generations," Obama has reigned as one of the most race-baiting figures in America, fanning the flames of division. What I see today and what I think is obvious to so many Americans is not that we're just heading on the wrong track. As a country, we are a bullet train careening towards the edge of a cliff. Here in Minnesota, particularly in Minneapolis, we have become a crash test dummy for some of the worst progressive ideas in the country because of progressive ideology that wishes to destroy America, one zip code, one city at a time. You remember the stories and headlines of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown of Ferguson, and the recent Tyre Nichols case, and of course, George Floyd and others. The progressive left and the media see such cases as societal gold to further that fascist agenda. Yes, I said fascist, because again, when one party seeks to remain in power by dismantling law enforcement, allowing illegals to flood the borders, erase or filibuster for sake of weighted biased and favored actions, give illegals driver's licenses and pre-register 16-year-olds to be politically assigned and committed, extend voting to prisoners and other non-citizens, politicize our abbreviated agencies to attack its political opponents, and utilize the media as a political arm, not only to expand their base, but to remain in power and assert a political takeover, that is fascism. Remember the Jussie Smollett case. Now, I know, this is a bit dated considering so much has happened since then, but I need to bring you back a bit. So walk down with me to memory lane. Remember the Jussie Smollett case? Now, I know, this is a bit dated considering so much has happened since then, but I need to bring you back a bit. You see, the details of the Jussie Smollett case are as sensational as they are disturbing. But the bigger story is why a successful actor would invent such a racially tinged plot. The inconvenient truth is that his actions didn't spring from a vacuum. Far from it. Our society actually incentivizes this kind of toxic behavior by glorifying victimhood. There are two primary ingredients that make up this noxious stew. For years, progressives have sought to weaponize identity politics and wield it as a tool of political power. You've likely heard of many of the associated phrases bandied around, such as critical race theory, white fragility, anti-racism, intersectionality, and so on. These craven ideologies have become ubiquitous in nearly all facets of life. The second element is the nefarious role played by legacy media outlets. You see, newsrooms today are packed with political activists masquerading as journalists. The institutional rot began long before Donald Trump came along. By the time Jussie hatched his plot in January of 2019, legacy media outlets had formed an assembly line producing a woke worldview for mass consumption. Smollett's story perfectly fit the media's machine's pre-designed narrative. Trump and Republicans were racist, and they were to blame for a stunning and violent hate crime perpetrated against a young Black and gay actor. Jussie had every reason to believe that once he was cast as a victim, he would be hoisted up on shoulders. In the Black community, many of our so-called leaders have fully embraced the toxic blend of identity politics and the celebration of victimhood. For generations, they have been selling us the idea that someone else is always to blame for our lot in life. We have no personal responsibility to work hard, get ahead in life, and create the kind of generational wealth that every other neighboring community seemed to be able to enjoy. We're told that we are owed something. Indeed, we are owed more than any other class, any other race, and any other religion. So why bother trying? After all, we certainly don't incentivize success. When one of us breaks away from the Black monolith by tuning out the culture of victimhood endlessly preached by our so-called leaders, we tear them down the moment they earn success. We don't learn from their achievements. They are not held aloft as pioneers who paved the way for us. This culture of victimhood meets modern-day identity politics, and so it goes. If this kind of thinking sounds absurd and self-defeating, that's because it is. The poisonous progressive politics that produced Jussie Smollett went into overdrive just 1 year later. Living in downtown Minneapolis, I watched portions of my beautiful city burn in the summer of 2020 as various media outlets blacksplained the rioting and looting taking place in front of my eyes. If it wasn't downplayed and dismissed as fiery but mostly peaceful protests, it was accepted as the righteous and warranted reaction to George Floyd's death. That's when I realized the progressive project was proceeding so splendidly that much of the country thought we were animals, incapable of controlling our behavior or emotions. Even more, they were okay with it. legions of Black talking heads spread out across television channels and were helped along by journalist activists. White suburban liberals sat in front of their TV screens, racked by revisionist guilt as they nodded their heads, wrote checks, joined demonstrations in solidarity, and endlessly apologized for things they never did or said. Without a hint of irony, they all presented their bigotry of low expectations as a gift in the name of combating racism. The Jussie Smollett case simply provided a mirror that presented an uncomfortable glimpse of the current state of American society and the acidic political ride we are experiencing as a country. What we see should be a warning to us all that we are far from united and heading down the wrong track. We need leaders brave enough to take the next ramp off this road before all exits pass us by. In 2004 of his DNC speech, Obama spoke of a unified United States of America, not divided amongst racial lines. In the recent podcast, he dismissed the entire ideal as post-racial fantasy, saying, "Those lines are aspirational and always have been." In other words, Obama, like so many other race-baiting leaders in this country, lied. So I will say it. One of the most detrimental and colossal lies you can tell about America is that it is systemically racist. Slavery was not invented or had its genesis in North America, and certainly not in the United States. Here's a savage truth. Slavery existed in Africa 1,000 years before a white person ever set foot to it. It also existed in all societies for 3,000 years. Common practice when you conquered your enemy was to enslave them. The failure of the current race-baiting poverty pushers of America still wish to ignore the fact that it was their precious Obama who said that a kid without a dad is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crimes, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. Now, why do we see so many Black males in particular incarcerated and a great multitude of the Black community in poverty? The welfare state. 70% of Black kids are raised without fathers. Women being incentivized to marry the government while also incentivizing men to abandon their moral and financial responsibility. And it's well beyond time to have that honest, savage conversation about this and acknowledge the fact that in order to see real change, to begin a generational turnaround of Blacks in this country. For example, LeBron James, who marries the mother of his children, has many, many followers. Why doesn't he tell his impressionable followers about the importance of a nuclear intact family, instead of telling them that they aren't safe and that cops kill Blacks because of the color of their skin? We need to choose better heroes and role models, people who have a strong grasp on the English language, values family, work, faith, and service, and investing in their children, encouraging and modeling strong and positive civic efforts and love for country. The breakdown of the family is the single greatest societal catastrophe that we face today and is the root of the spiraling crime and moral void in America. But hear this, particularly to the Black community. America owes no one an apology. No one. Obama and others are the problem as they lie perpetually in the face of well-known documented facts. The decline of our society by those who lie out of convenience, deny long-standing proven facts, and perpetuate victimhood, particularly for Blacks, furthers the divide, to which I find the most absurd, as racist, condescending white liberals and moderates attempt to convince me of my supposed oppression. So now, according to these race-baiting poverty pimps, Blacks can't bank while Black, buy houses or luxury cars, wear cornrows, or get C-suite jobs according to their ideology. They've also taken to the claims that math is racist, properly spoken English and all phonetical rules are racist, as so with SATs, the two-parent family unit, and even dieting has been deemed racist. Clearly, the underlying true agenda is to render all things that impose an exceptional standard or has a possible outcome of achievement of individualism, where you may be considered a contributing, responsible, and free-thinking person with a moral compass whose roots stem and character from a strong faith and or strong core values, is a direct threat to their agenda. It's only acceptable to go along without question and simply believe the elite, poverty-pushing, fascist demigods who want to keep all exclusivity to themselves and, of course, enjoy a lifestyle and privilege higher and better than those whom they need to follow them. Obama was, with obvious conclusion, a grave disappointment, to say the least. My awakening has caused me to not only embrace the American experiment, but to actually do what so many of our so-called Black leaders haven't and won't, and that is to actually care enough and love my community enough to tell the truth. What an opportunity he had to truly unify this country, to increase our presence on the globe, and to make a lingering case for other nations as to the significance of a true constitutional republic. What a shame. You know, I was reminded of who Obama is in that interview with Charlemagne and on CNN, but mostly I was reminded and disgusted when Obama went to Flint, Michigan and told the people that the water there was fine, then asked for a glass of Flint water and faked a sip. Black America, we need better heroes and we can do better. And that will conclude this episode. Thank you for listening. I hope you tune into the next episode. In honor of Father's Day a week ago, I thought I would discuss what it means to us all to be a man, from a feminine perspective, of course. And just a hint, it's not that men should show sensitivity or join us shopping or be willing to buy our feminine products. Quite the opposite, in fact. So make sure you check it out. Please subscribe and comment. And remember, be beautiful, be faithful, be American, and above all, be true. The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.